Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Speaking of pulse racing, there's nothing like gets the pulse racing in December than good Pirates talk.
With that Green Bay Packers note, though, I know you're just trying to placate Audrey Snyder, the Penn State beat writer from The Athletic. If she's listening, I'm sure she appreciated it. But
it's very important that we mention that. Rob, how you been?
You know, I'm hanging in there. I just came back from a scintillating morning at PNC Park where we got to meet Vince Velasquez, who is going to be your number five or perhaps even number four starter this year for your Pittsburgh Pirates, and chat with him for a bit. And, I'm just basically trying to keep moving, keep the blood pumping.
Were you surprised in the least, and this is not a Pirates question, it's a baseball in general question, by the amount of money and years that were doled out in San Diego to free agents?
I was not, because we've seen this in the past, coming off of a new CBA. Owners, get a little freewheeling with the spending in that year or so immediately following the passage of a new CBA. And this is kind of the first normal year we've had in a while, the first normal offseason, first normal spring in a couple of 3 years. And I think teams, there's a lot of money in this industry right now, and teams are throwing it around a little bit. Some teams are throwing it around a little bit. And this was also a pretty blockbuster free agent class as well. A lot of big names, and big like Aaron Judge, 12 feet tall, and big like, Jacob DeGrom, who's just got a big arm. See, I'm doing that little transition thing too. I'm learning from you, Steve. I'm learning from the best.
Very nice. Well done. It's also one with shortstops. Dansby Swanson and Carlos Correa still have not signed, so it's not over yet. What do you think of the market is with the two of them? Because Correa obviously is thinking high end, I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious to see where Swanson goes, just because I being a National League guy, I in the past, back when we had the old schedules that were more National League than not for your club, I got to see him more often. Next year, you play everybody. I'm kind of curious to see what if the Braves feel a need to counter that somehow, if they do lose him. I think that's something that I can't see it dragging too close to spring training. We're kind of hitting that period traditionally, not always, but traditionally, once you get around that week before Christmas. I mean, it used to be like an unwritten rule in baseball, as if we need another one, that you don't do any transactions at Christmas time. It was just, at the end of the year, the holidays, New Year's, Christmas, that you just shut it down. But now, I mean, a couple of years ago, the Pirates traded Josh Bell on Christmas Eve as I was doing my tie to get ready for Mass. I got the text and say, trade. I'm not going to put my day in an uproar, but I kind of think that those guys, I just think in the situation, there's been so much done so fast over the past couple of weeks, maybe it goes into the new year and everybody kind of there's that second round of big signings or, bigger signings, and that kind of carries us into spring training.
But when did Catfish Hunter sign with the Yankees? I think it was New Year's Eve.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember one year the Pirates gave a contract extension to Jason Kendall, and at that point I was still the backup guy on the team on the beat. Joe Rutter, our regular beat writer, he was on a trip or something. So they called me, the office calls me and says, "Hey, Kendall is going to get this extension. Could you do something on it? And I was up caroling actually with the neighbors, and it was like 2 feet of snow in the ground, and I'd had some wassail, I'm not going to lie. I'd had a glass or two of the old wassail, and I hurried home and pulled up Jason's number, and I called him, and we're talking, and he pauses, and he goes, "Hey, man, are you okay?" I explained the situation. He goes, what do you want to know? I'll tell you anything you want to know. This is outstanding. And he was great. So, good guy, Jason Kendall.
Yeah, a year ago, we were talking about Brian Reynolds and, you know, how long would he hang with him and so forth. Well, now we're at the crossroads with him. What is the market for Brian Reynolds, in your opinion?
Boy, there's probably 27 or 28 teams out there that would love to have Brian.
Yep.
It would make a serious offer. You know, I kind of heard that the Seattle Mariners could be a sneaky team in this whole thing, because they got some decent prospects, and they're kind of like, you know, they had a little success last year, didn't get a lot of traction in the postseason, but I think they could put together a pretty interesting package. The Marlins, of course, have great arms. I think they've said that pretty much everybody in their rotation, with the exception of Alcantara, is available in the right kind of trade. And, I mean, you know, the Pirates definitely would love some impact pitching. You know, you got to figure the Yankees have always. I mean, I know the Yankees scouted him hard already last year, and they probably made some kind of offer to Ben Sherrington at the deadline last summer. But Ben was really, you know, at that point he was kind of in listen only mode. And it's hard to say for sure where this is going to go now that Brian has made a trade demand. I mean, they've been talking off and on now for a couple of 3 years about trying to extend him. And it, you know, didn't get much traction. And I guess things picked up here over the past couple of months. And, Brian, he and his agent, he switched agents recently as well. He used to be a Boris guy, and now he's with a different agency. They got a number, and, it didn't come anywhere close to what their value, you know, what they see the value is. And so Brian said, you know what, enough of this. We've been dancing here for 3 years, trade me. And I was, to be honest, I was a little surprised that Brian issued that demand, because, you know, he's always a quiet guy in the clubhouse. He's one of those guys who's, when he speaks, you know, it's important guys listen to him. But he doesn't seem like, he certainly doesn't seem like a troublemaker or anything like that. But, you know, to make a demand like that, he's taking a stand. And I think he's not only taking a stand for himself, but he's, you know, obviously got the approval of the players' union on it. And there's a lot of guys in that clubhouse who look at that and say, yeah, okay, you know, kind of try to, you know, kickstart an organization that really doesn't like to spend money. So maybe that demand was geared, you know, and the timing of it was geared merely to try to get a last push effort for an extension over the goal line. Or maybe, you know, he just looks at the situation here and realizes, hey, I'm going to be, you know, when that window opens in 2 or 3 years, I'm going to be, at, you know, 30 plus years old, heading into my free agency years. They're not going to bring me back as a free agent. So why don't I try to cut out now and really make some money?
Money, no question. So, I mean, I understand that. But doesn't it get to a point where an athlete has enough pride to say, you know, I not only want some money, I want to win.
Definitely. I think that's certainly part of it as well. I mean, you know, I mean, it's you just see, you see that there's, I think I read something last summer that was, at times it's like two steps forward and one step back, or even vice versa with this club, that they make some gains in some areas, but then they'll kick themselves or do something foolish or show that they're still, you know, mistake prone or, you know, I mean, they signed Quintana, they put him in the rotation, and he's a left-hander, and he's veteran, and he's experienced, and he's doing a good job, and his teammates love him, and then they flip him at the deadline.
Yeah.
That's all what they do. You know, it's just, you know, you're right. There is kind of a stasis here, and I think some players, you know, I think it was Jason Kendall that remember joking around with us once back in the day. They kind of call it the Bucko malaise.
Yeah,
that you're kind of here for a while, and you realize this is kind of it, you know, and you want to move on to some place where, you know, you do have a, it's more than just maybe once every 10 or 15 years you have a shot to do something in a playoff. So it could be every year, you know, that there's no law against that. There's no rule against that.
What do you think of the Santana signing?
I like it. I would like it more if
sure.
It was 10 years ago. But he seems like, and we did a Zoom call with him a couple of days after he signed, And they were, you know, the media relations director sitting in front of the camera saying, okay, thanks everybody for showing up. And then you see Santana in the background and he's kind of dancing. And then he dances and sits down in front of the microphone and, you know, hey guys, what's, you know, it's just a very good, very, you know, an infectious personality. And I think that's a lot of what they need. And I've had a couple players, we were talking to two or three guys last week who were in town for charity events. One of them, Chase DeYoung, the reliever, was saying, you know, that guy, the minute he steps through the door here, he's got more credibility than pretty much anybody in this clubhouse because he's done it and he's been there and he's seen it and he knows how it works. And, you know, we've really seen over the past, you know, geez, going back to 2018, 17, 19, they just don't have that. They have talent in some pieces here and there.
Right.
But they don't have a guy who knows how to make it happen, you know, and you need some of that. You need somebody to kind of steer the ship a little bit at times with guys, especially younger guys. Otherwise, you end up with a, you know, what they had in 2019, which is a divided clubhouse, an angry clubhouse, guys pointing fingers, and every guy trying to figure it out on their own and do something individual, but it doesn't really mesh. They need a guy who can kind of knit things together a little bit. So maybe he can be that guy. And maybe with, you know, a guy like Vince Velasquez, who's been a couple different places, he started, and I remember, I guess it was his second game of his career, he struck out like 16, 17 guys with the Phillies, I think, right?
Yes.
And then since then, it's been probably more bad than good, and he's trying to become less of a thrower, more of a pitcher, and that's not always easy to do. Yeah. And so, you know, maybe he can bring some of that sense of, you know, because he's still out there doing it. You know, he's 30 years old now, and he's still trying to make that evolution. And I think that's something the guys need to see.
How bad is it when the best story of the offseason is that your team wins the draft lottery?
I was torn about that because, you know, you like to cover the team that has the number one pick because that's, you know, every possibility is out there, and
sure,
it can be fun
right.
to watch and all right. that. But then you see, you know, the club posted that video of them in their suite, and the president of the team is rocking around high-fiving people like they just won the Super Bowl. You know, there's a reason you were in position to get that pick. It's because you lost 201 games over the past 2 years.
I know.
So, you know, it's like, yeah, I think probably on that video, the reaction that struck me the most was Derek Shelton, the manager. He's kind of in the bottom right corner. And when they announce it, he kind of like goes, yeah, but then he stands up and kind of puts his hands in his pockets. And that was kind of it. He was kind of like, well, I'm happy we got the number one pick, but, you know, let's realize why we're here.
Right. Exactly.
And it's not really celebration time yet. We're happy to have the pick, but you really shouldn't celebrate, you know, the road that went
the circumstances that created it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh,
Rob. All right. I'll think of when I'm out at the Rose Bowl, okay? So.
You're killing me, man. I'm going to be in State College this weekend.
It's commencement.
My older daughter is finally graduating. She was a grad student. But this will be the first one we actually get to attend because her first graduation was wiped out by the plague.
Well, yeah.
And then my younger daughter's graduation was wiped out when she wound up with appendicitis. So,
ew.
You know, 6 years and what, $150,000 later, I'm actually going to see one of my daughters walk across the stage and get a degree. So if it doesn't snow, please tell me it's not going to snow.
On Saturday? No, Saturday would be fine.
Saturday would be fine. Okay. Well, you'd be.
Yeah, Saturday's fine here. And that's when yours takes place, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Saturday would be fine. No issues here at all for that. And
Ruby, and
you could tell it's the $150,000 he'll be driving the AMC Gremlin.
Exactly. Well, you have a good time in Pasadena. I know you're not a Rose Bowl parade guy, but I will think of you as I start my tailgate here in the living room that afternoon.
Sounds great, Rob. We'll talk when the new year rolls around. You're one of the best in the business, and we appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much, man. Have a good holiday, everybody. Take
you
care.
Too.